Welcome. Hello. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, and this is Talking to Grandma. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. We are so glad to have you here. You won't want to miss out on our amazing guests from earlier episodes. Go back and catch up on our previous episodes and be sure to subscribe to catch our next episodes as they come out. Our guest for today is Annie Lee. Annie and I go way back. We've known each other for a while and most recently have been on a similar journey with raising multilingual children. We talked about how at times this journey of passing on a heritage language you're still learning can be scary, which I related to so much. A little about Annie. She is the Director of Policy at Chinese for Affirmative Action, CAA, a nonprofit organization based in San Francisco, California. In her role, Annie advocates for systemic change that protects worker and immigrants' rights, promote language diversity and education equity, and remedies racial and social injustice. CAA is a co-founder of the National Stop AAPI Hate Coalition, and Annie develops policy solutions to address harassment and discrimination against the AAPI community, especially AAPI women. Annie previously worked as a civil rights attorney with the U.S. Department of Education in the Office of Civil Rights and enforced the federal civil rights law that protects students from discrimination. She began her legal career as an Equal Justice Works Fellow at the National Center for Youth Law, where she specialized in foster youth and education rights, special education, and school discipline. Her passion for serving students stems from her experience as an 11th grade U.S. history teacher in the Bronx. Annie is a graduate of Harvard Law School, Fordham Graduate School of Education, and the University of Pennsylvania. In this episode, Annie talks about her experience as a coachee of the Language Preservation Project. She was actually our first coaching client. It was such a pleasure to work with her, and we are excited for you to listen in to our conversation today. Welcome, Annie.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. We were just talking about how we go way back. Actually, it's been many years. We met when we were young, 21-year-olds in New York City as first-year teachers. And now here we are, professionals in our careers and raising young bilingual children. It's so beautiful to be on this journey together, not just young bilingual children, but biracial, bicultural children as well. So I'm wondering, did you always imagine that this is where you would land, however many years later?
That's a great question. I don't think I could have foreseen the many twists and turns life had when I was 21. I couldn't possibly foresee where I am now. And I certainly could not have predicted the amount of joy I feel parenting this beautiful child of mine.
Yeah, it's something I've never felt before. Like when I had my first son, I pretty soon after called my mom and apologized because I was like, I will never love you as much as you love me. Like I've never felt this love before until I had a child. The love of a mother is just overwhelming. So I also knew that my task was to like love, but also be able to let go and like release because it was a really intense love, and not something that I could have ever imagined.
That's a beautiful way of framing it.
So, you know, you're doing the big job of parenting, but also adding on top of that, the job of bilingual parenting. Why did you decide that you wanted to raise your son Mason bilingually?
It was very important to me. It is very important to me that he knows how to speak and understand Mandarin Chinese because that's the language that my parents speak. So I grew up speaking Mandarin because my parents immigrated from China. My parents came from different parts of China where they speak different dialects. And so my dad comes from Shanghai where they speak Shanghainese. My mom comes from a village in Guangdong where they speak Cantonese and actually their village dialect, Toisan. But my parents together, when they communicated with each other, spoke in Mandarin. And so that's what I grew up speaking. And my parents are not fluent English speakers by any means. And so I grew up translating and interpreting for them a lot. And now that I have my own child, I really want Mason to have a relationship with my parents. And in order for him to do that, he needs to be able to understand Mandarin and speak in Mandarin. And so there's that very practical element, but also he is biracial. He is Black and Chinese, and I want him to celebrate and really own both of his heritages. And part of that for me on the Chinese side is knowing the language. My husband has been very supportive in ensuring that Mason goes to a Chinese daycare, for instance, and has a lot of language exposure. And so it's been amazing watching him. He's 21 months now, and so he's just beginning to speak, but he speaks in both English and Mandarin, which is really great. But it's been like a journey, I think, for me to unpack a lot of my own anxiety around language and my own guilt about how I speak it and whether I can pass on something to him that I'm not even perfect at. And so I've had to go through my own journey here too, which I think is indicative of parenting in general, not just with bilingualism, but so much of parenting and raising another child is sifting through my own struggles with things like identity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The parenting will turn you inside out in terms of asking like, all this stuff is coming up. Why? And is this something that I want to pass on to my child? You mentioned, you know, when we were discussing and preparing for this conversation, that you were able to reimagine bilingual parenting from a place of fear to a place of joy. So can you tell us a little bit about that, like starting point in the place of fear? You started to touch on that, and then how you made the transition to the place of joy and what that feels like being in both of those places.
Oh, the place of fear has a lot. There's the fear that my Chinese is not great. I have a very limited vocabulary because I use Chinese to speak to my parents. And so the vocabulary is limited to things like eating and how I'm feeling, but not any technical language. And so I'm missing a whole chunk of vocabulary there. And so the way I speak Chinese is very basic. And so there's the vocabulary limitation. There's my accent. So my parents are from Southern China. We speak in a certain accent, and it's not the quote unquote traditional Chinese accents, which is a Northern accent, really the Beijing accent. And so I have self-consciousness around that. And there's just such fear that I won't do a good job teaching my child Mandarin because I wouldn't say I barely know it. I'd say I'm at a fourth grade level. And
fourth graders can speak really well, I must say.
Thank you. And so I just got very nervous about that. And I bought a bunch of Chinese kids books, and I would have to look at the dictionary all the time. And I was thinking, how could I read this to my child when I'm barely understanding every other character here? Just a lot of anxiety about, can I do this? And am I capable of teaching a language to my child when I don't know it well enough and I don't speak it at home with my partner in the way that my parents spoke to each other? And so it's a different type of language immersion that Mason's going through compared to what I went through. And I was putting a normative value on that specifically, that the way I am bringing him up in language is worse than the way my parents brought me up. And so there was a lot of fear about screwing this up. And then, you know, it snowballs from there. Should I even try? Should I just give up now? And there was just a lot of anxiety around all of that. But what helped me make the shift was actually coaching with you, Vito. You helped me unpack a lot of my own issues with identity and language, but also helped me understands that learning is a process. And I know I probably should have realized this as a former teacher, but embracing the idea that learning is ongoing and that I can be 35, I can be a mom, and I can still be learning. And it's a joy to share learning with my child so that we can both do it together. And when we stumble on a word in a you know, Chinese children's book that neither of us knows, then we can look it up together and try to use it in a sentence together. And that has really changed my mindset. And so now when I do stumble, when there is a challenge, I embrace it and I try to work through it with my child rather than shut down because I didn't know it in the first place.
Yeah, that's so powerful, that transformation, and also thinking at a higher level, like what kind of modeling that is for your child. Like bilingual parenting isn't just about language transmission. It's also about like mindsets, dispositions, and culture. And so taking that new disposition of like, we're going to be learners together instead of shutting down is modeling for Mason how to approach learning with math or learning with, you know, reading in any language or learning how to do a new task that, you know, sometimes you make mistakes and that's okay. And that's what the process of learning is. And you can ask for help and you're never too old, too young, too anything to do that. Have you found that your family has also made some transitions in their approaches to bilingual parenting? Because when we say bilingual parenting, sometimes we think it is like just one person, the heritage, you know, speaking parent that is passing on the language, but it really is a whole network of people in your family that need to be a part of it. So what has their role been in the past and has that shifted any over time?
That's a great question. I do feel like we've got buy-in from both my parents and my larger family, as well as my husband's parents and his family. And so that's been really nice. And so my parents do try to speak to Mason in, actually, sometimes they try to speak to him in English, and then I have to tell them that it's okay. You can just speak to him in Chinese and it would be great for him to hear Chinese from you. And so they do that. And I really appreciate the support from my husband's family. And an example is in Chinese, the way you, every person has a title. Every person who's older than you has a title. And that title depends on whether the person is related to you from your mother's side or your father's side. And so aunts on the mother's side are called Ayi, aunts on the father's side are called Gugu. And my husband's sisters have really embraced their Chinese name. And so Mason's very good about calling my sister Ayi and Landon's sisters, Da Gugu, like big, yeah, big paternal aunt, and Xiao Gugu, younger paternal aunt. And so that's been really nice. And he calls Landon's mom Nai Nai, which is the traditional father's mother term for grandma, and Ye Ye for paternal grandfather. And so we use all of that. And I really appreciate that my in-laws have embraced their Chinese titles.
That's beautiful. My heart is melting right now, just even imagining him in that situation, using those words, right? And now he's becoming more verbal. Like, this is the age, you know, right around two. I think it really depends for every child, but right around two, the vocabulary just explodes. And so what has that been like for you? And what, you know, kind of take us through that process.
It's been pretty fun. And it's been interesting because it's both English and Chinese words that I don't even know where he learned them from. And so yesterday at the dinner table, he was saying up and down and using his arms to go up and down. And then in Chinese too, he'll say, xie xie, thank you. And I speak to him in Mandarin, and so he really understands everything when I'm saying in Chinese, like, bring me the blanket, and he'll bring me the blanket, or do you want milk, and he'll nod. He says hiyo a lot, which is there's more. So, you know, when we're cleaning something up, he'll be like, oh, there's more there. He's obsessed with buses, and so a lot of buses, trucks, cars, things like that. And so it's just really fun reading with him and having him point out different words. He knows a lot of the animals in Chinese. Sometimes he does have a mashup, which I think is hilarious. So he both says dog in English and then go in Chinese. But and sometimes he mashes them up to be like what does he say? Just go. It's like a mashup of dog and go. And it's really cute. And so it's really awesome watching him grow in both languages. And I think it's been, I think there's some fear. I don't think I've ever felt it, but some fear among folks who think that you shouldn't teach two languages at once because it might confuse a child or it might delay language development. But in our case, I feel like we've seen that that's just not true, that they are sponges. They absorb so much. They're able to generate, they are able to comprehend in both languages. They're able to generate in both languages. And it's been awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think that that, you know, narrative is a narrative that has been communicated by institutions and schools. So it is understandable that people might still be holding on to that. That was definitely the narrative that was given to my parents when we were growing up. And research has shown that that's not the case. And we can see that, like, you know, the rest of the world is so bilingual and multilingual, and it starts from an early age and is possible. And I think also, like, understanding that language development may look a little bit different for multilingual children. So at, like, you know, right around starting at two, they may not really be making associations in the differences in languages yet. So for our family, our children, we speak to them in Spanish and Danish, using, like, one parent is speaking Spanish and one parent is speaking Danish. And then we speak English between each other. And my daughter, who is just about to turn two, like, just kind of uses all the words that she has. She uses them all. She's not like, oh, you're the Spanish speaking parent, so I'm going to use just Spanish with you. And that's okay. Eventually she'll get there. But developmentally, it's normal for kids to use all of the words that they have and to mash them up. And sometimes people can think that that's confusion, and it's really not. It's just normal language development for multilingual children.
That's very cute.
Super cute. And so we're with my family right now in Houston. We generally stay most of the year in Denmark, but we're staying with my family. And so it's really a lot of different languages, because the adults in my family speak to her mostly in Spanish, but we speak to the dog in English. So she has been picking up, like, so much English because of, like, the simple commands that we say to the dog. And she's just repeating, like, outside Harley, bed Harley. I guess that counts. She's trilingual. Can you tell me a little bit about your role as the heritage speaker in your family? And has that ever felt difficult, being the one who kind of is trying to pass on the non-dominant community language? Because you're surrounded by so much English all the time. So what has that felt like for you? And if it's felt difficult, how have you reimagined it?
It doesn't feel difficult in that I feel lucky that I grew up speaking Mandarin. So many simple things I can talk to him about. So, you know, bathing things, eating things, changing clothes. And so all of that comes very naturally. I do want to challenge myself to grow my vocabulary a bit. And this actually started when I was pregnant, because I already knew that bilingualism was really important to me. And so I was actually got some of my old college textbooks. I studied Mandarin and Chinese in college. And so I brought some of those workbooks out to start to practice. And then I realized that I actually just need to talk to a real human being. And so I got a Chinese tutor who's in China, and we Zoom about once a week, and we go through this other textbook that she's introduced me to. And I'm just trying really hard to, when I talk to my parents, incorporate, for instance, the new vocabulary that I'm learning, and more than vocabulary, sentence structures. So I just, when I talk to my parents, you don't have to use fancy language and conjunctions, even. You just talk normally. And so I'm trying to incorporate more of that into how I speak to my parents, so that it'll just become part of my just repertoire. And then I can use it with Mason. And so there is a constant tension, I suppose, just that I need to invest in myself, in my own self-growth, which takes work and time and is really exhausting sometimes. Sometimes I really don't want to go to a Chinese Zoom session with my tutor, and I just want to sit on the couch and relax because now the baby's asleep and I did work all day and I haven't done a workout yet. And I want to rest. And so that has been difficult. But I try to just be gentle with myself and not just do my best. And if I don't prepare for my Zoom session, which I often don't, it's okay. And there are words that I know I've learned before and I just keep forgetting, and that's okay too. And so I'm just trying to have some grace, with myself. And I'm just leaning into different tools in a way that I feel like is new for me. For instance, there's this owl. It's called Luca. It's an owl that reads. So you'll have a book in English or Chinese, and the owl somehow has been programmed to read thousands and thousands of books. So all the books that we buy from this website are also compatible with Luca the owl. And so I use Luca. Mason's a little too young to use this tool because he can't sit down and flip pages and let the machine read to him. But I do it, and I think it is really helpful. And I will say some books are even too hard for me. So some of the simpler books are totally fine, but we also got all of the Magic School Bus books in Chinese, and that's pretty high level for me. And I'm just like, my comprehension is not great because it's words like, you know, there's one Magic School Bus where they go into like the clouds and they're learning about water, and they're saying words like condensation, which I don't really know what that is in Chinese. I barely understand that in English. And so it gets a little high level. And so I am just trying to have some grace and be like, you know, it's okay. I still have time. I can learn all of these scientific terms introduced via the Magic School Bus. And so I'm just trying to remember that. My partner's super supportive, and so that's really nice. And he also, I think, has picked up some Chinese at this point. And anyway, it just works in our household, even though I'm the heritage language speaker.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I am going to look up Luca the Owl immediately, because that is also Anton's favorite like book to read all the time, because it's so long, so time consuming, so many words. So if I can outsource some of that to Luca, I would be so happy. And I think, I mean, you just illustrate what is so important about like bilingual parenting is that it's just not one person's job. And that there has to be other supports to it to ensure that it works. And for me, like, I didn't grow up speaking my heritage language. So I had a lot of similar fears around like not having enough vocabulary, like not being able to like pass on the like quote unquote right Spanish to my child. And I similarly, like you, do a lot of learning and have lessons and things like that, but it can't all fall on me. And there have to be like other inputs that are a model for the language so that I know that everything isn't on me. And now my son is 4 years old, and he, you know, goes to Spanish class on Saturdays and has different kind of like inputs and different people in our lives that speak to him in Spanish, and he'll correct me sometimes. And I'm like, great. Like, that's wonderful. This is what I hope. And I know that I don't have to say everything perfectly. I've told him, I've communicated to him that it's not my first language. So sometimes I will make mistakes and need to learn how to say things, quote unquote, correctly.
I love that, because it's modeling growth, and you're not defensive when he corrects you. And I think that that's so, so important. So I look forward to that day when Mason's telling me that my Chinese is incorrect.
Oh boy, it'll come sooner than what you think.
But I wanted to point out in your question about family and support, I was, you know, in our little family with my husband, me, and Mason, it's I feel totally comfortable speaking to my child in Chinese, even though my husband doesn't really understand some of it sometimes. And I was worried about if I am out with Mason in public or with his family who doesn't understand Chinese, when you're a language minority, I think you're very conscientious that you're speaking something that other people don't understand. And sometimes in America, that makes people nervous. And I don't want to, you know, draw attention, unwanted attention to us. I don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable. Yet I still want to speak to my child in the language that we speak together. And luckily, it hasn't been as anxiety-inducing as I was anticipating. My husband's family totally understands and is on board with when I speak directly to Mason, even in front of other people. I speak in Chinese, and that's okay. And it hasn't come up in public, but it is something that I still worry about, especially in a place, even in California, where you hear lots of different languages. This country is so English focused that it's the dominant language that people expect to hear. And sometimes they don't always appreciate hearing something else. And so I just am conscious of that.
Yeah. I think that is a huge consideration and a real fear, I think, especially, you know, it's a constant, but also in waves of like the anti-Asian hate crimes that we see and people being targeted, not only for the way that they look, but also the languages that they're speaking, which is unfortunate. And I think for me as an educator, like really trying to help students from an early age see a different narrative and be more inclusive. But in the meantime, you're raising a biracial Black Chinese child who has a lot to consider in terms of the way that he's navigating the world in the US. So what are some, I guess, considerations that you have around that? And I imagine conversations will be happening soon, not at this age, but at some point, starting to talk to Mason to help him make sense of the world around him.
I feel like my husband and I have had these conversations, but we haven't, they're ongoing. I don't think you ever land the conversation anywhere. And it just is constantly evolving, but we are really trying hard to help him understand and embrace his Black identity as well as his Chinese identity. And I will say sometimes there's just different challenges with each. You know, the language acquisition is one thing in a very English dominant society, but you know, we live in San Francisco and the Black population is unfortunately dwindling and there are just very few other African American children around. And so we are really conscientious about making sure that he has, you know, Black friends, but his current daycare, unfortunately, doesn't have any Black kids. And so he's the only one. And, you know, one of the things we're also very interested in is making sure that he has a Black male teacher before third grade. And it's almost like finding a unicorn in this city. And I don't know how we're going to navigate these conversations moving forward, but there are principles that we think are really important, and we're going to try to adhere to those to make sure that he can have both cultures just really deeply embedded in him. And so it is definitely an ongoing conversation and challenge on both sides, the Chinese side as well as the Black side.
Yeah, that's so great that y'all are thinking about that, of the intentionality of the environment that surrounds him. And also just want to name how many people don't have to think about that and don't have to think about their child being the only, you know, Chinese speaker or the only Black child. And I think a lot that we have to do in all of our own like locus of control to try to start to shift that.
One of the things you and I discussed during coaching is how the language plan will change with age. And I'm already beginning to see that kind of, because we're still early, but now we're beginning to think about where do we want to live and what schools are we going to, and just trying to make decisions that impact our language plan. And I think that that's been interesting. And I'm trying to be flexible, because I want to remember that nothing is set in stone and things can always change. And if he doesn't go to a bilingual Chinese English school, he can always go to Chinese lessons on the weekends and things like that. And I'm trying to really take into account that things absolutely will change in ways that I probably can't foresee right now, but that's okay. As long as I remember what our North Star is, which is that we're trying to raise a bilingual child, and there's different ways to do that. And I don't have to wed myself to one specific thing. And again, so much of bilingual parenting is just parenting. I think that that applies to just parenting in general, that just being flexible and being able to adapt, I think, is just really important. I think it becomes more fraught with the bilingual parenting aspect because it's so tied up with identity, and not just my own child's, but my own identity, that becomes very fraught. And therefore, I have a tendency to cling on to things that I already know, a path that I'm already on, things like that, but trying to liberate myself from that and remember that learning is constant, that I am evolving, that my child is evolving, and we can grow together. I think that that's what's really important. I'm saying all of this really because I'm trying to remind myself that this is all true, especially in the years to come.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. And we do need like a constant reminder to ourselves, right? Like we can intellectually know those things, but the other ways of thinking or being have been attached for a long time. And so undoing them takes some intentionality. And that's something that we also talked about in coaching, of like, what are some of the things that we've learned growing up and up into the point that we are now? And what are some of the things that we want to unlearn? And so I think that that is not only, you know, specific to language and bilingual parenting, but also just the dispositions that are necessary to create an environment where your child feels a strong relationship to the language. I think that's most important, that they feel a connection to the language, because ultimately it's them that decides if they're going to speak it or not. It's them that decides if they are going to continue to have a connection to that language. And so we can hold on so tightly to all these other things and all of these outcomes. But ultimately with parents, like, our kids are individuals and are going to choose their own path. And we have to let go.
Yeah. Related to that, that's the perfectionism, which I think is part of my upbringing and my personal struggle, is really something that I don't want to pass on to Mason, because I never want him to feel shy speaking Chinese because he isn't quote unquote perfect at it. And so I really want to break that cycle and liberate him. And so, or rather, he's already liberated, just like allow him to continue to be his full self. And one of the other things that I gained from coaching, and just hearing how your family does it, is it's just so helpful to get outside of the American context. And I grew up here in a bilingual household, in a big, vibrant Chinese community. And so it always felt okay. But even so, the way we conceptualize language in America, I feel like, is so limited, especially compared to other places in the world where people speak so many different languages. And it's totally normal there. And just challenging myself to re-envision what language is and what it can be and how to raise a family and how to just operate. I think I, especially in the last couple of years when we haven't been traveling and have just been hunkering down here, my worldview has gotten very limited again, but I want to remember to think about how other families across the world raise kids in many, many different ways and in many different languages.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And there's so many different approaches to doing it and things that you can try and evolve over time. Yeah, my husband drives me crazy because I've always had like a struggle relationship with language learning. And he doesn't remember learning English. He's like, I'm not sure really when I like learned this language. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's so annoying. And that's hopefully the experience. I think the experience that our kids are going to have, they're not really going to remember learning this language because it's just been a part of their life, or learning these languages because it's just been a part of their life, and not seeing language learning as something that is like impossible or really difficult, which I think is a narrative that we have in the US because we don't really promote multilingualism. Mm-hmm. And if you were not multilingual, you know, from birth or in your home setting, in school settings, it can often seem as like a really hard thing to do or a really hard thing to dominate. And as an adult language learner, it is, but it became a lot easier when I had a more playful relationship-based approach to language learning.
Love that.
Well, Annie, it's been so lovely talking to you and connecting somewhat on a similar time zone. We used to do our coaching sessions, I think, at like 5 in the morning for me and 8 p.m. for you. We were literally meeting on different days, but it was great. So wonderful to have connected again at a different phase in life. I feel like we connected in New York and then at Harvard in grad school and now here as like new young parents. And I can't wait to see how the journey continues and where life takes you and your family.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat about my experience. And the coaching, again, has been so, so instrumental in setting us on a much more fun and joyful path.
Thank you. As we close out, is there any like words of wisdom that you can share to new families that are starting a similar journey?
I think my piece of advice would really be to have fun with your child and yourself. Especially if you're the heritage speaker, there's a lot of baggage that comes with that, especially if you are the heritage speaker who grew up in the United States and where it might not have been accepted fully. But it's okay. It's okay to learn with your child. It's okay to grow with your child and have it as a learning experience for you both.
Thank you so much, Annie. Where can people find more about you and your work?
My work includes working at Stop API Hate, which is a national coalition dedicated to eradicating anti-AAPI hate using non-carceral methods and really basing our safety through a community model and through education equity. And so you can find out more about Stop AAPI Hate at our website, and you can find more about me personally on Twitter. And my handle is at Annie Lee 415, and I'll see you on Twitter.
Thanks, Annie.
Thank you for listening. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project and sponsored by Onward. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. We love hearing from you. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co, slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma, and remember, please subscribe or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening right now. Help us grow our community and reach more families and educators by sharing this podcast or leaving a review. See you next episode.